beginning at the bottom of Samach Ben Amud Bet, the Gemara is continuing the discussion about how to explain the second half of our Mishnah. The second half of our Mishnah, which is discussing Ribit Midrabanan, a problem of Ribit Midrabanan, the Gemara is trying to discover what exactly the issue is in the Mishnah, or what's the issue of Ribit Midrabanan here. So we had a suggestion from Rabba at first, which the Abaye rejected. Then we had a suggestion from Abaye, which Rava was questioning. And now Rava is going to make the final suggestion, which looks like we're going to accept to be the explanation of the Mishnah. Elo Amar Rava, it's the second to last line of Samach Ben Amud Bet. Elo Amar Rava, Kishachivna, when I pass away, Rav Osha Nafak Levati, Rav Osha is going to come out and greet me. We saw a similar statement from him in the end of Baba Kamel. Dematartzimat Nitan Kavate, that I answer up the Mishnayot according to his perspective. Because we know that Rabbi was the Mesadar Mishnayot. He had Talmidim, Rav Chia and Rav Osha. Rav Osha and Rav Chia were Mesadar the Breitot. And here, what Rava is doing is explaining the Mishnah of Rabbi according to a Breito of Rav Osha. So he's basically saying that the Stam Mishnah here is based on Rav Osha's explanation in the Breito. So what is that? The Tani Rav Osha, Harei Shaya Noshe Bechavero Maneh. The person owed him 100 ma'a. V'halach v'amad al gorno, and the person went to his goren and said, V'amar tenli motai, I want my loan paid back. It's time for you to pay the loan. Shani rotzeh lekach ben chitin, because I want to purchase with this money wheat. V'amar lo chitim yeshle, no problem, I have chitim. Shani ten lecha, I will give you the chitim. Tzev asan alai kishar shel achshav. Let's create the transaction now based on the market price for chitim today. The market price for chitim today, I will give you the 100 ma'ah that I owe you in kind, in chitim. Now, higezman chitim limkar, came to the point in time where the chitim were going to be sold. The original creditor here comes and says to him, listen, I want my payment of my chitim. Shani rotzeh lemochran, I want to sell them now. V'kach behen yain, and then to purchase with those chitim, yain, wine. Amelo, yesh li yain, no problem. The debtor says, no problem, I have wine. Shani yotan lecha, and I will give you that wine. Tzev asan alai kishar shel achshav. Let's convert the wheat that I owe you into wine based on the market prices today. Yes, mana yain limkor. Then the time came when he wanted to sell the wine, or the time when people normally sold their wines. Ramano ten li yainai. He says, give me my wine. Shani vatzel mochra v'likach bo shemen, because I want to sell it and then purchase with that oil. Amalo shemen yeshli, says no problem, I have oil. Shenaten lecha, that I can replace this wine with. Tzev asel alai kishar shel achshav. Let's go out to the market, determine the market price, and we'll convert the loan that I owe you, or the payment that I owe you in wine, into shemen. Kulam im yesh lo mutar. If he has any, at the time that he makes this deal to convert the loan over, convert any debt that he has to deliver in kind, then if he has the item that he's asking him to convert it into, then it's mutar. But if he doesn't have it at that time, then it's asur. Now the Braisa concludes, the Gemara really concludes here, my lakach b'halvato. When it means that he took it, he purchased it, and the word lakach means lakach b'halvato. Not that he purchased it with actual cash, but he purchased it with a loan. Achlok is between Rashi and the Tosafot. And that is that the line in the Gemara says, my lakach, lakach b'halvato. That is that when he says lakach, it means lakach b'halvato. Lakach is a word that's found in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah actually has two pieces to it. One is which he purchased the wheat, and the second part of the Mishnah is where he converts that, or he wants to convert that outstanding obligation into wine. Rashi believes, and we saw this in the previous Amud, that Rashi believes that the only problem in our Mishnah is the wine, not the chitim, not the wheat. The wine is the problem because he's converting an outstanding loan or debt of wheat into yayin, and therefore the requirement to be in possession of wine is only... right, or the requirement to have possession of wine is what allows you to do this transaction, but if you don't have wine, it won't work. Whereas regards to the chitim, you don't have to have it in your possession or not. Why? Because he's purchasing it with cash. And he purchases it with cash, right, then we don't worry whether he has it in his possession or not. So that's the way Rashi explains the Mishnah. Based on that, Rashi eliminates this girsa of my lakach, lakach babato. Rashi believes that it was a lo garsina no preirish mishubashu. It was a mistake that fell into the svarim, and you should eliminate it here, because what is this lakach coming to explain? It's coming to explain the first half of the Mishnah. The first half of the Mishnah says, lakach chitim, that he purchased chitim. So now Rashi explains purchased chitim means he literally purchased it with cash. And therefore Rashi doesn't need any explanation of that part of the Mishnah. Other than Tosafot and other Rishonim believe that the problem in the Mishnah is not limited to the yayin. It's both the chitim and the yayin or the Mishnah are a problem. If that's the case, why does the Mishnah use the verb lakach, that he purchased it, which sounds like he bought it with cash, if the whole concept of what Rabbi Yoshi is explaining over here is that he's converting debt into a purchase? So there, based on that, the Girsa in the Gemara is my lakach, lakach ba'avoto. Lakach means to purchase here does not mean he purchased with cash, but rather he purchased with an outstanding loan. With an outstanding debt obligation, that's how he purchased it. So that's how Tosafot will explain the word lakach in the Mishnah, based on this Girsa in the Gemara. One of the problems that Tosafot has with Rashi's explanation is the fact that Rashi has to eliminate this Girsa in the Gemara in order to fit his explanation. Tosafot says, Rashi just erased the piece of the Gemara. But based on my explanation, we don't have to erase it because it belongs here. Rashi, on the other hand, believes, no, that what ended up happening here is that they took the Braisa of Rav Oshia, which talked about Chitim and Yain and all these different produce, and then they imposed it on our Mishnah and said, oh, the Chitim and the Yain in our Mishnah are like the Chitim and the Yain in the Braita of Rabbi Yoshia. And therefore, now we have to explain why it says Lekach, that he purchased with cash, if all of this is a conversion of a loan. So Rashi says, no, that's not the explanation of our Mishnah. Rabbi Yoshia is discussing one case. Our Mishnah is discussing another case. But we're using Rabbi Yoshia only to explain the part of our Mishnah, which is talking about the Yain. And therefore, Rashi eliminates the Girsa over here. So now, just to explain, Rav Oshia over here basically is suggesting that a person is able to convert debt into an in-kind payment, that he can convert the debt into an income payment as long as the individual has the produce or merchandise which he is converting into. As long as he has it, that is mutar. Now that will become the explanation of our Mishnah. What's the issue in our Mishnah? The Mishnah is that he has chitim, or that he owes him money for the chitim, and now that debt that he owes, he has to pay in chitim. The Mishnah says that he may not convert it into wine unless he actually has wine in his possession. But if he has wine in possession, he is mutar to do it. That will be the explanation of our Mishnah. Now, why? Why is this the case? The answer is because if the individual has the item in possession at this time, the merchandise that he wants to convert it in, if he has it, then we suggest that it's as if the malvetz, if the creditor took possession of the item. And since this is, if he took possession of the item, when the item or the in-kind payment goes up in value, then that value is accruing to the creditor on his own merchandise. It's not as if that's the Lovez merchandise that's going up, the debtor's merchandise that's going up in price, now he's paying him a higher amount back, which is considered interest. No, but rather, it's as if the creditor is taking possession of this item, and it's gone up in value in his possession. The Rashi suggests over here, which the Rambam also says something similar, that the reason here is because if he wants to, if the creditor wants to back out of this transaction, then he is kayaleo b'misha para. There's a problem of misha para. So since the creditor and the debtor cannot back out of the transaction because they have a misha para, they have this curse on them, since they made an agreement, a verbal agreement, and this verbal agreement, which was done by conversion of debt, creates a misha para, even though there's no full kinyan here in order for the creditor to take possession, but there's enough of a mitigating factor, which is that he won't walk away because of the curse, that makes it as if it's in his possession. As if it's in his possession, then when it goes up in value, that will be considered to be appreciation of his own produce and not payment of interest on the loan that he's giving him. I mean, that he's not demanding payment of the item immediately. Now, the Rambam says similar to Rashi, the Raiva on the spot disagrees with the Rambam, it seems to be most of the other poskim disagree, that there isn't even a Misha Parah here, because we've seen this in the Gemara in Kiddushin. It's on the Gemara in Kiddushin, but a Mekadesh B'milveh, no Mekudeshet, that if you get married through a Milveh, then you're not Mekudeshet. What does that mean? That a person may not convert a loan into Kiddushin. And the Gemara there says, V'chein the Mekach U'memkar, that's the same thing is true when it comes to transactions. If you're converting debt into a transaction, there is no transaction. You cannot create a kinyar or transaction through the conversion of debt. The only time we say it works is when you forgive the debt. If the creditor forgives the outstanding obligation, then with the hana'a, with the benefit that the debtor receives from the forgiveness of that loan, then you can create a kinyan with that hana'a, or you can be mekadesh a woman with that hana'a. But just the conversion of the debt itself into either kiddushin or into a transaction will not create any form of kinyan. So according to those poskim, there is no even misha para over here. But despite the fact, we still consider it as if it's in the possession of the mocher because of the visual aspects of the transaction. There's a mekach or memkar, there's a transactional nature to what they're doing, number one. And number two is, it looks, in the situation, it looks like the mocher is just taking delivery of his product and not that the debtor is ever increasingly paying him more money for holding on to or not having to repay the debt immediately. So now, Amar Rava, Shmami Nam Drosh Yatlat. From Rav Yosha, we can conclude three things, and this will help us explain the Mishnah. Shmami Nam Demamidin Malve Agabi Pirot. Number one is that you're allowed to convert a outstanding loan into in-kind payment, into delivery of produce. And we don't say it's not like when you have the money in hand. Remember, that was the problem actually with Rabba's explanation before. Rabba's explanation before, Abaye rejected because Rabba called it it's like as if he didn't get the money in his hand. Now, we said before, if you have money in hand, then if the buyer gives you cash and the outstanding market price is there, then we don't worry whether you actually have possession of the produce or whether you can go out into the market and buy that produce. It's mutar for you to guarantee supply in those instances. You can guarantee supply because either you own the produce or with the cash he's giving you can buy that produce. Over here, there is no cash coming into his hand. There is no cash coming to hand because he's converting debt. When he's converting debt, then what is he can't say to him, go out to the market and buy it, because he can't go out to the market. He didn't get any cash at this instance. And that's what caused the problem for Rava's explanation. But over here, that Rava says, no, it is called Yisrael Biodo, but Shmamino Deishlo. That's only if he has it in his possession. When it's in his possession, if he has the produce or the items that he's offering to reconvert the debt into in his possession, that's the equivalent of having that Yisrael Biodo. It's the equivalent of having the cash in hand at that moment. And therefore, he's allowed to convert the loan into that item. On the other hand, if he doesn't have it, then it's a kalapis robi abido, because now he's getting, if he doesn't have the item and he's not receiving any cash, there's no way for him to recreate or to gain the produce that he's supposed to supply to this individual. And the last shmamina is that Dama Rabbi Yanai. Shmamina dita Rabbi Yanai. And the last shmamina is that we have Rabbi Yanai. Dama Rabbi Yanai, malihain, mali dmehen. What's the difference between them and their monetary equivalent? Now, with Rabbi Yanai, we're going to see in a second, this is a machlokes between Rav and Rabbi Yanai. Dima Rav amar osima mana peirot. Rav says that you're allowed to create a transaction in which a person gives money today for supply, a guaranteed supply at the current marketplace. That is allowed, one is allowed to do that as long as the delivery comes in produce. On the other hand, one may not do that if the delivery or the payment is going to be in a monetary form. Meaning, if the person says, I'm buying, purchasing you today with this cash, and you're going to guarantee me slav chitim, Rab believes that the settlement must be in chitim, because in that way it looks like a transaction and not like a halva loan with rebit, with interest paid on it. On the other hand, if you settle in cash, then it's mechsek rebit, it looks exactly like rebit, even though it's done as a transaction. But since you handed him cash today, and when he settles you in the future, the price of the chitim has gone up, he's giving you more cash back. So you hand him 25, and he's handing back 30. It looks exactly like rebit. I hand him a certain amount of money, and when he repays me the loan, he's paying me that plus more, which looks like rebit. So Rav says that's not allowed. Rabbi Yanai says it makes no difference. If one is permitted to settle in peirot, then one is permitted to settle in cash, meaning that we look at them as being fungible. Whether it's settlement in produce or settlement in cash, they're both fungible. The reason that it's all mutar is because you gave him cash up front. When you hand him cash in the first place, that is permitted, and then you can settle in any way you want. Whether you settle in chitim or you settle in cash, they're all the same. They're all fungible. They are exchangeable items. All right, so now we know, Shmamina, from our brace of Rabusha, we know that that's the halacha is like Rabbi Yanai. Why? Or that it's like Rabbi Yanai? Because in our brace, what does it suggest? It suggests that one can convert, for instance, he owes him chitim. And then instead of paying him chitim, he converts it into yayin, turns it into wine. Now, what the person had agreed to do was deliver chitim, deliver wheat. Now, when he comes to payment, he's not delivering wheat. He's saying to him, listen, I want to convert that into wine. When he converts it into wine, that's equivalent to making a cash payment. Why? Because he is basically assessing the value of the chitim today, giving a cash value to the chitim, then transferring that cash value into yayin and into wine. So the fact that we allow you to assess the value of the chitim at this moment in time and then convert it into wine shows you that we're not interested in having the exact delivery. You don't have to deliver the produce that you guaranteed the supply for, but you just have to deliver the value, whether it's the produce itself or whether it's an equivalent value in cash or in yayin or in any other product. So therefore, that will be like Rabbi Yanai. Now, just another side point I would make over here is that the price of Rabosha goes through products. It goes through chitim, then yayin, and then it goes to shemen, which basically seems to be that he's following through the harvest cycle of the year, meaning that he's basically converting each item as it's being harvested and then brought to the shuk. He's converting into the next item that's being harvested at that time, following the agricultural cycle, meaning he's going from chitim to yayin to shemen. So now the Gemara has a question. Meitevei, kulam im yesh lo mutar. We have in our Breito, I mean the Breito of Rav Oshia, we have a position that if as long as he has possession of the product, he's allowed to convert it into another, he's allowed to convert a loan or some outstanding obligation into this item. So that sounds exactly like Rav Yanai and not like Rav. So Rav Oshia's Breito is a problem for Rav. So I'm Ravuna, I'm a Rav, b'misha mashach. No, the case in Rav Oshia's Breito, according to Rav, is where he actually made a kinyan on it. If he made a kinyan on it, then there's no problem. Why? Because if the mocher makes, if the debt, a creditor, and look, who's the keach, who's the buyer, makes a kinyan on it, then it comes into his possession. If it comes into his possession, then the value goes up. Again, it's going up in his possession, the value, and therefore we don't worry about it. It doesn't matter how he settles the transaction afterwards, because then it becomes like a mecher, meaning that when he purchased it, he took, made a kinyan on it. Later on, when the individual who is guaranteeing the supply here says, listen, I'm not going to pay you in chitim, I'd rather transfer this into wine, there's actually a second transaction taking place. It's as if he's buying the wheat back that he was sold to, he sold to this individual, and now he's buying it back, and then that second transaction, then he's incurring a obligation in wine. So if that's the case, we're dealing with mekach u'memka. Mekach u'memka is not a problem of interest, and that's how Rav gets around the problem. Tosfos over here comments that b'mashach, he makes two comments. One is that afilu achlanu mocher mutar, l'shalem chitim acherim, that even if the mocher sold it, ate them, meaning that since the individual, the creditor here, made a kinyan on them, and then the debtor goes ahead and eats the product, then how do you say that the product of the moch, of the creditor went up in value? It doesn't exist anymore. Then we don't worry about it. V'lo dami the saw the asur. And Tos says it's not included like paying in-kind payment. Why? Mishum tahatum alvah v'havazvine. Over there, it's a loan. Saw the saw the asur when it's done as a loan. I lend you an object, a produce, and then you pay me back in the same produce. That's a problem because it's a loan. Over here, it's clear that there's mecha chumemka. There's a transaction taking place. He purchased wheat, or he purchased produce from you today, and you're buying it back from him at a later date. Those are two separate transactions, and that's permitted. Even if the market price changes, that's fine, but that's the nature of business. That's not a loan. Now, Tosus also adds, it's interesting that Tosus says here that this kinyan over here, this kinyan mashich over here, is not a real kinyan in terms of him owning the product, but rather it's a kinyan in the sense that it makes it mutar to allow this transaction to go through. So Tosu calls the kinyan over here not a real kinyan to create a real transaction, but a kinyan enough to remove the mechzeik ribit. That's Tosu's opinion. There are other Rishonim and even the Tosu's Rishonim that are not goresis, and it seems from that they think that the kinyan here is a full kinyan. Now the Gemara says, Ibish Mashach Tzrich LeMeimar. If you made a kinyan in it, then what's the chiddush of the whole brice of Rav Oshia, according to Rav? You make a kinyan, and of course we can explain the price that way. Ella, kigon shichado karen zavit. It's not really that it was mashach that he made a kinyan, but rather he designated a location for the produce of the mocher. So now, what are we learning from this? We're learning from this that yichud is milsehi, that the designation of a location for this produce of the mocher is enough to say that it's considered as if it's a transaction and not a halva, not a loan. Why? So if he takes the produce, he says, basically, I'm guaranteeing you supply. Then when he guarantees him supply, he takes a portion of his wheat, then he places it on the side, he says, this is for that settlement of that purchase of that creditor. So when he does that, even though there's no kinyan, he's not being maskir, he's not renting him out the property underneath it, and there's no real kinyan here. Nevertheless, the fact that he designated a certain amount of the wheat to go towards the creditor, already it's not mechzeik ribit. It doesn't look so much like ribit anymore because he already assigned a certain portion to the mocher, and then when it goes up in value, we can just say that it's the mocher's produce then went up in value. As opposed to when he doesn't designate any portion of it for the mocher, and then it goes up in value, there it is mechzeik ribit. That's the answer of Ramahuna Amarav for Rav's position, how he explains the price of Rav Oshia. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel explains the price of Rav Oshia to fit into Rav's position by saying, "Hai mani Rabbi Yehudihi, tamar tzarech berivit mutar," that he believes that the author of the Braisa of Rav Oshia, or the opinion that Rav Oshia is following in the Braisa, is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that when it's tzarech berivit, when there's only one outcome where ribit will be charged, then it's mutar. What does that mean? That means that Rabbi Yehuda believes that only when there's an absolute certainty that the payment that comes out in the end will be ribit, meaning that you will make money no matter what, or you will have a gain no matter what, then it's classified as ribit. But if there are two possibilities, one possibility is that you will receive a larger payment, and that would be classified as ribit, but there's also another possibility where you won't get such a payment, and when you won't get such a payment, or won't go up in value, then we say there is no we say that there's no ribit, because that's called tzarechet ribit. So what's our case over here? Our case over here, which Rav basically distinguishes between settling in produce in kind and settling in cash. If you settle in produce or in kind, then it's not mechzek ribit. Whereas if you settle in cash, then it is mechzek ribit. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda calls tzarechet ribit. And there are two possible outcomes here. The two possible outcomes are that the debtor either settles his transaction with paying him the produce that he promised to supply, or the other possibility is he sells him in cash, meaning that either he gives him cash or he converts the debt or this obligation to another piece of produce. In that instance, Rabbi Yehuda says that's not called ribit. That's not called ribit because there's no guaranteed outcome of ribit, because the settlement can go either way. One possibility it is ribit, one possibility it's not ribit. In that case, we don't call it ribit. Tzarechet ribit, it's not called ribit. How do we know this? The Tanya. Person was owed or obligated to pay. He was a debtor for 100 ma'a. And then he says, listen, if I don't pay it by a certain time, my field will go be sold to you. In place of that, they will settle with the field. As long as the mocher, as long as the seller here being the debtor, eats the peirot, this transaction is mutar. On the other hand, if the buyer here, who is the creditor, eats the fruits, asur. Why is it asur? Because it basically looks like ribit. Because in the end, if the debtor does not default on the loan or is able to pay the loan back in cash, what just happened now? The creditor lent him cash. In the meantime, the creditor is eating fruits off of a field that belongs to the debtor. And then when the debtor repays him the money in the end, all he gets back is his field, but all the payroll that he ate in between, the creditor benefited from. That's basically what we call interest. So we don't let you do this. On the other hand, Rabbi Hudemer, that even when the buyer, even when the creditor eats peirot, it's still mutar. So Rabbi Yehuda comes to prove his point that this is true. There's a case of Baitus Ben Zonin, Shasosodil Mecher did exactly this transaction, where he has an outstanding debt obligation, and he said that if I don't fulfill the obligation, you can take this field. P. Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah, this was done under the jurisdiction of Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah, and the case was a case where Lokeach ate peirot. So I can show you that luck is like me, because Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah allowed exactly this type of case to transpire. I'm lo chamim responded to Misham Raya. You can't bring a proof from that. Mocher ochel perot hayav lo lokeach. You got the facts of the case mixed up. Over there, the mocher, the seller, I mean the debtor, was eating the perot. That's why it was mutar. But that, the case there wasn't that the lokeach, the buyer or the creditor, was eating the perot. My binayu. What is this machlokas about between Rabbi Yehuda and chamim? Amar Abai, tzadachad beribit ikir binayu. Their machlokas is exactly this: whether tzadachad beribit is allowed or not allowed. Why? Because in this case, there are two possible outcomes. Two possible outcomes are that the debtor either comes up with the cash and then gives the cash to the creditor and he gets his field back. The other possibility is that the debtor never comes up with the cash. If he never comes up with the cash, the creditor will continue to own the property and the property will become his. So now, only in one instance is there a problem of ribit. The problem of ribit arises only when the debtor comes up with the cash. If he comes up with the cash, then repays the debt. The fact that the creditor ate peirot along the way looks like interest, or it is interest, because he's basically getting a benefit for the fact that he lent him money. On the other hand, if the debtor defaults on the loan, and then the field becomes the payment for the loan, then it's the creditor's property. If it's the creditor's property, the fact that he ate the fruits all along, no big deal, because it was the creditor's property. So based on that, there's two possible outcomes, only one of which will result in ribit. So now that's what Rabbi says, the machlokas between the chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda is over here. The machlokas is whether tzadachad beribit, when there are two possible outcomes, where only one of which, right, will result in ribit, the chachamim say that's a sur. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's mutar, that's shari, that's okay, because there's no guarantee there will be ribit. If there's no guarantee there will be ribit, that's not called ribit, that's not called interest. Tosfos asks a question here. If this is the position of Rabbi Yehuda, then why don't we say for Rabbi Yehuda that someone who does a saw basaw transaction is also should be mutar according to Rabbi Yehuda? Because of a saw basaw transaction, there is no guarantee that there will be interest. Meaning a saw basaw transaction is that I guarantee you supply today, and then I'm going to pay you that, I'm going to supply it to you in the future. Now the market price of that item might go up. If it goes up, then you're going to pay, it looks like you're paying ribit. But on the other hand, there's another possibility, which is that the market price stays stable. If it stays stable, then there is no ribit being here. So that should be classified as tzadachad beribit. So why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda allow, we don't find that Rabbi Yehuda allows such a transaction of sa b'sa'a. So, Tosfos answers over here. V'yesh lamar, t'lo chashiv tzadachad beribit, el davar sheyesh biyad malveh, o biyad loveh lasot. that when we call it tzedek haberibit, is only when it's empowered or in the hands of the creditor, the debtor to determine the outcome of the situation. The outcome of the situation is going to be determined by the decision or the abilities of one of these two parties. Then that's called tzedek haberibit, right? Shelo yehi ribit velo damin ha-sabasa. By sabasa, it has nothing to do with the debtor or the creditor. It all has to do with the market. Shetalu b'shar, the market prices. V'alkein yehi ribit im yokiru, and therefore it will be ribit. So Tosus qualifies with this statement here. Tzedek haberibit is not a problem. That's only in a case where the ability for it to have two outcomes are determined by the malveir or the levair, by the creditor or the debtor. But if it's just subject to market pricing, then we don't consider that to be tzedek haberibit. When it's subject to market pricing, we assume then if it goes up, that's classified as a ribit, because neither party has control, and that won't be called tzedek haberibit. Now, Rava disagrees with Abaye. Now, Abaye's explanation of this brisa is what Shmuel used to explain Rabbi Yehuda, which we find in other places. Rabbi Yehuda said tzedek haberibit is fine. So based on that, he's going to explain the brisa of Raboshia above, according to Rav. Rav, who says you can only settle in kind and not settle in cash, will say that that Mishnah or that brisa of Raboshia is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, or is based on the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, said tzedek haberibit is not a problem. So even though there are two possibilities here, one to settle in cash, one to settle in payrot, and according to Rav, only the payrot side is mutar, that's enough, according to Yehuda, not to be classified as ribit, and therefore you may settle either in cash or in payrot. But Rava says, no, you're explaining the brisa incorrectly. The explanation of this brisa, the machlokes in Rabbi Yehuda and the chamim in this brisa, is rather, Rava amar, bit amanat nachazir ikir benayu. Ribit that will be returned in the end is the difference between them. So what does that mean? He says that the machlokas here is a case where the mocher is going to, where the lokech, the buyer here is going to eat the perot, meaning the creditor is going to eat the fruits. Now, in the end, what's going to happen? The debtor comes along and repays the loan. When he repays the loan, the creditor will give him back the perot that he ate. So if he gives him back the perot that he ate, then there is no ribit, because he's handing him back all the excess value that he got before the end. The only problem going to Rava is, then what do the chamim think? Why do the chamim classify this as mechzik ribit? Why does it look like ribit? In the end, he's going to give it back, and he's going to give it back in the end and deduct that from the debtor's payment, then of course it doesn't look like ribit. So what's the position of the Rabbanan? So Tosfos has to say that the case here is an interesting case. The case is not where, for instance, he ate payroll, the creditor ate these fruits along the way, and now when they come to sell in the end, they do a net settlement. Net settlement is we deduct the amount of payroll he ate from the money that the debtor owes, and then we come to a net settlement of what the debtor now owes to the creditor. But rather, the creditor says over here, I will not credit you the value of the payroll that I eat until you pay me the debt in full. First, you must pay me the debt in full, and then only afterwards will I credit you the value of the payroll I ate. So that's why, according to Chamim, according to Tosafot here, is that it's mechzik ribit. It's mechzik ribit because the creditor is still making a demand for full payment of his loan. And then only then will he credit him the value of the perot he ate. So it looks like in the meantime, basically he's eating perot, he's getting ribit. Looks like ribit because he's not allowing a deduction for the value that he's eating in the loan amount. He's saying no, that you have to prepay the full loan amount, and that's why it's mechzik ribit. Tosu also makes a second point, which is that Rava must believe that tzedek haberibit is asur, right? According to Rava, Rava's explanation here says that everybody holds tzedek haberibit is asur, even Rabbi Yehuda. And you have to say that Rava agrees midoraisa at the Torah level that Rabbi Yehuda believes it's mutar. The Rava's statement over here that everybody agrees tzedek haberibit is asur is only on a rabbinic level, midorabanan. But on a deraisa level, he agrees that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with chamim and tzedek haberibit is shari, because there are many other gemarot that seem to indicate that tzedek haberibit is mutar according to Rabbi Yehuda. So those will have to explain Rava, and those instances are all cases of do. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutar. But in case of the Rabbanan, and that's what Rava disagrees with Abaye's explanation of the price over here, is because at a level of the Rabbanan, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that tzedek haberibit is asur. Now, Rava continues. He says, Amar Rava, hashtad amar Rabbi Yanai, based on what we see in Rabbi Yanai, mali hein, mali demehem, when it comes to settlement, we're indifferent between you settling in the item itself or in cash, or another item that replaces in kind, meaning that cash or produce that you're supposed to deliver, settlement, we're indifferent between it. Then, Arminan Mali Dmehem, Mali Hain, Nami Arminan. Then we will say at the beginning of the transaction the same thing. At the beginning of the transaction, it won't matter, right, whether you have produce in hand or the person's giving you cash, and with that cash you can go out to the market and buy that produce. Because again, if we're indifferent between in-kind or produce payment and cash, then the same thing would be true in the beginning of the transaction. Beginning of the transaction, if we demand of you to have that item in your possession, then that will be true even if you don't have that item in possession, but you are giving cash to then purchase that item with. So that's what we've been saying all along, right? That when you have a open market where the market price is determined and a person is guaranteeing supply forward, when he guarantees supply forward, he must have that product in hand. If he doesn't have the product in hand, but he's receiving cash and he can go out to market and buy that product, then the whole transaction is fine because we're indifferent between cash and you having the product in hand because the two are fungible at this point because there's an open market for the product. Now, Rashi asks the obvious question. He says, that's the Mishnah. We've been quoting this Mishnah all along. What do I need Rava to tell me this from Rabbi Yana? I know this already from a Mishnah. So Rashi answers up that the Mishnah later on, which we've been using through the Gemara now to show you that in the beginning of a transaction, an individual, as long as the shire, once the price, market prices come out on an item, that one is permitted to either have the item in possession or use the get cash to where he could purchase the item. Rashi says that's subject to machlokas later on in the Gemara, if that's the explanation of the Mishnah. So what Rav is coming along to say is, based on Rabbi Yanai, we'll say that the explanation of the Mishnah is exactly that. The explanation of the Mishnah later on is that you are permitted in a case when you are guaranteeing supply forward, that either if you have the item in your produce in your possession, or you have the cash that you're receiving from the buyer, then those two were indifferent, or either one of them is fine, because you're able to, the items are now fungible, because there's an open market for the produce. So now, Eitvei Rav Papa, Rav Huna, Breda Rav Shua, the Rava, Kula Mimiesh, the Mutari, Menlo Asur. So, the Rav Papa and Rav Huna challenged Rava's conclusion here, based on the Brisa of Rav Oshia. We just had the Brisa of Rav Oshia. Rav Oshia says you're only allowed to have such a transaction when you actually have the produce in hand. Well, we know the answer to that already because we've explained Rav Oshia was a unique case. What's the answer to this? You respond to them, Hatam halva hachaz vinei. Has to do with the difference about the transactions. Over there, by the case of Rav Oshia, there was a halva, which means there was a conversion of a loan. The conversion of a loan, then the supplier is not ending up with cash in hand. If he's not ending up in cash in hand, we can't say we're indifferent whether he has the produce in hand or he has cash, which he can go out and purchase the item, because he's not getting any cash. And then when it's vine, when it's a transaction, meaning that you're giving him money to guarantee supply, over there we could say it doesn't matter if he gets money or if he has actually in his possession that item that he's going to supply, because both of them are fungible in this instance. But that's only because he's receiving cash. But in the case of Rav Oshia, he's not receiving any cash, he's just converting an outstanding loan. Now, Rabba Rav Yossi Damri Tavayu, my time Amru Rabbanan, what's the reasoning behind this logic that we've been dictating or stating all the way through? That poskim al hashar shebashuk, that one may guarantee supply based on the market price, that's when the full market price, everybody is selling and buying at this market price. Val pishenlo, even though you don't have that item in possession, you can guarantee supply and create a transaction that way. Da'amrele, because the individual is buying can say to him, Shakila tuvutech v'shadja chizrei, take your good or whatever you think you're, I'm buying supply from you. So the guy says, the supplier is saying, look, I'm doing you a favor, I'm giving you supply. The individual is purchasing can say to him, listen, the truth is you're doing me no favor. Take your favor, whatever you think you're doing, and we can throw it out. Why? My hanatli. What benefit have you really provided to me? Had I had the money in my hand, instead of giving it to you to give me the supply, had I had the cash in hand right now, I could go out to the cities. These are small cities around where Rabba and Rav Yosef lived in Pumpadita. That I could go out to these cities and buy supply there. Meaning that since the market is open for this supply, when I hand you the cash and you guarantee me supply, you're not doing me any favor. I could go to anywhere now and use my money and buy that supply. So if I had the cash in hand, I could replicate the transaction that we did. So the fact that you have my money now, right, it doesn't matter. Shouldn't matter at all. So that's exactly what we're saying here, that when the produce goes up in value then at a later time, and he has to then supply it at the higher price, right, the buyer can say to him, listen, that's your problem. That's your issue. Because had I not given you the cash to supply me, I would have gone to another city, purchased it, and had it in my possession, and the value would have gone up in my possession. Now that I've given you cash, why should I be in any worse of position? That's basically what we're saying. We're saying that when you hand him the cash, it's as if he's now gone out and bought the supply for you, because the cash and the product are fungible at this point in time, because there's a market for it all over the place. And therefore, he says, whatever my cash is the equivalent of having the supply in hand today for myself, and it went up in value in my possession. So because of that, right, you're not exposed, or you shouldn't have been exposed to market fluctuations, because either you had it in your possession, that item that you were going to supply me, and if you didn't, you couldn't take in the cash and right away bought that product in the open market. Or I myself could have taken the cash somewhere else and bought it in the open market. So therefore, the increase or market value is something that's accruing to my benefit, nothing to do with the fact that I gave you cash earlier on. So, Amalei Abaye, the Rav Yosef. Abaye says, Rav Yosef, based on your logic, Elamiata mutar luvot sa'abasal. He says, based on your logic, it should be mutar to lend somebody a bushel of wheat in order for him to pay you back a bushel of wheat later on, which the Gemara says is a problem of akribit. It's a problem either to do this because we're afraid that the value of the wheat will go up over time, and when it goes up over time, when you're repaying the bushel of wheat, it looks like you're handing him back more than he gave you. If you're handing back more than he gave you, that's what we call interest. So it says, Mishum damatzi amalei, because why using your logic? Shakino tivutech v'shadja chizri. He says, take your good, whatever you've done for me, take it and throw it out. Why? He says, listen, had I kept the wheat in my own possession and stored them, you think my wheat is going to be exposed? Kadachi, Rashi gives two explanations, either that it'll grow mold or that it'll get hot and expand and get it ruined. But basically, had I kept the wheat by myself, nothing would have happened. I could have kept the wheat until the later time when the price went up and sold it then. So I had no interest in giving it to you in order to lose money. I would have kept it myself. I did you a favor and I lent you this chitim. Now, when you're paying me back the chitim at a higher price, it's not because I'm charging you interest, because I lent you money, but rather because I'm indifferent between you having the wheat and me having the wheat, as long as I get my wheat back at the time that there's a higher price. If I'm indifferent about that, and I could have done it myself, then you really haven't provided me any good by giving me higher priced wheat back in the end, because I could have done that or replicated that transaction myself. So he says, no. Rabbi Yosef answers him and says, no, they're different. Why? The difference is what the transaction is. Is it a transaction or is it a loan? By Sal Basal, it's clearly a loan. When it's a loan, we don't say, oh, we look at what you could have replicated or how you could have the same transaction going, because you basically lent him wheat. When you lend him wheat and then he hands you back wheat, then we're going to have to look and see if there's more coming back than was given, because that will look like interest. But then when there's vine, when we're talking about transactions, purchases, here the individual comes with cash and is purchasing this supply going forward. When he purchases the supply going forward, we say, listen, I could buy it from you or I can buy it from someone else. I could have done or replicated this transaction anywhere with my cash. You're not doing me any good by giving me wheat down the road, right, that is of higher value, because I could replicate the transaction. But that's because it's a transaction. You're not lending him money over here. You're buying supply from him. When you buy supply from him, then he's got to come up with the supply. And if he doesn't come up with the supply, you say, listen, I could have done better with my own cash and bought supply from someone else, or you could have gone at the time I gave you the cash and bought in the market that supply. So when you hand me back a higher priced item, you really haven't done me any good. So again, the difference between halva'ah, lending, and Zvine and a transaction. So Amalei Adabrava the Rova, Vaha by the Metev Zuze Lafsira. Wait, it's not so clear that the transaction is exactly equal between the case when I buy it from you at the market price with my cash, and then you're guaranteeing me supply at that market price, versus if I had taken the money myself. Why? Because if I had taken the money myself, I would have to pay for a middleman. I would have to pay for someone to get me the suppliers over to use my money and purchase the item. Meaning that it's not so obvious, just because you have the cash, you can go out and buy it in the shuk. You would have to get someone to bring you the produce so that you can purchase it. And you'd have to pay that individual for delivering the produce or putting you in contact with the suppliers. So over here, you're actually saving yourself money by getting the supply through this individual, because he's basically giving you the market price today without any discount, without any charge for providing a supplier. So that benefit that you're getting is actually a benefit from the transaction, and that should be classified as interest or a problem, because you're getting a tova, you're getting a benefit from the fact that you gave him cash up front. So the answer, first answer of the Gemara is, he says, that anyway, that he pays him that discount. He gives him the money for the safsira. That he paid him whatever that extra cost of bringing the supply to him is, he gave him that money. So therefore, the transactions are identical. Ravashi Amar, Zuze Din Shein Hu Avdele Safsirute. Ravashi answers differently and says, you only, safsira, having a middleman bring in the produce, or to bring you the produce that you can purchase it, that's true, right, when you need two people need to get together. But always, when people have cash, the one who has the money, the sellers always find the person who has the money. So that means if I have cash in hand, I'm the one who's buying supply, the suppliers will always find me, because my cash basically speaks for me, because I have cash, and the suppliers are the ones who need to cash out their produce. So they're the ones who are going to go find the person with the cash. So in this instance, he doesn't need a safsira, he doesn't need a middleman, because the fact that he has money to spend will bring in the sellers. And therefore, he wouldn't have to have a higher safsira, and he can say, I'm indifferent, again, that you did no tova, you did no benefit to me, because you selling it at the market price is what I could have bought anyway by myself, because the sellers would have come to me with my cash. Okay, now, the Gemara continues, Rabbi Rav Yosef, the Amrei Tarvaya, we have another statement by Rabbi Rav Yosef. Haman doiv zuza atara harifa. Someone who is buying supply at the early market price. Now, early market price means when it's at the going, when they're just harvesting it. There's a market price where people sell in small quantities. He basically says, I'm giving you cash today based on the market price today. Right then, but I'm expecting delivery later on. So I'm expecting that delivery later on. Now, the Gemara says, if that's the case, if he purchases it at the early date and he's looking for a guaranteed supply, then he has to show up at the threshing floor and show the individual that he's really going to purchase this. Now again, the importance, as Rashi points out, of the threshing floor here is that you're only allowed to guarantee supply before the full market price comes out is when you have that item in your possession. So over here, it must be someone with the go-rent. Someone actually has the physical produce in possession, because that's the only way you can sell it for it, it can guarantee supply for it. So over here, it's a person with a goren, and you must go visit him in the goren. The Gemara wants to know why. Lamai, ila mikna halukoni. Every time he's making a kinyan on it, we don't see any kinyan over here. Ila kabula le misha paro, if he wants it to be, to make sure that the individual will not back out of the transaction, there'll be a problem with misha paro, it'll be cursed if the supplier backs out of the transaction. Kalomit chazay namino kabula misha paro. Misha Parah has to have nothing to do with him showing up at the Goren or not showing up at the Goren. Meaning that Misha Parah should exist because they agreed to a transaction. If they agreed to a transaction, he shouldn't be able to walk away from it. Where it says, no, the Olam, the Kvulim, the Misha Parah. No, the issue here is the getting the problem of Misha Parah that would be cursed if he backs out of the transaction. Umade of Zuzei Atara Harifa, someone who buys in the pre-market, basically someone who's buying before the full market has come out at the Goren. The Bei Trey Utlata Yohiv, he goes out and he goes to two or three suppliers and gives them cash and saying that I want to buy supply from you. Now, when he says I'm going to buy supply from you, the person does not believe that he's actually going to buy the supply forward until he really comes over and says, I'm really taking delivery of this supply, because he's basically putting a down payment down to see, and he'll go around and look around and see which has the best produce, and then he'll come back around and tell them, oh, you know, I don't need that supply, I do need this supply. So then, if he shows up to the threshing floor and keeps coming to check that a supply is coming through, then the seller or the supplier believes that this transaction is really going through, and he's sumechdat. Then in sumechdat, there's a problem mishapara, because he believes that the transaction will be completed. There's a smichudadat, gemiratadat. The Chazanish says gemiratadat has to do with the makneh, the one who is, right, selling. The smichudadat has to do with the recipient. So over here, the recipient of the money is, right, so mech dat, he relies on the fact that he received the money now, that he really is going to have to supply it, because this individual keeps showing up. Below, if he doesn't show up, if he doesn't keep coming back to him to make sure that the supply is there, he's going to say, listen, he found somebody else who had better fruits or better produce, and he bought it from him, and he's not really going to carry through the transaction with me. And therefore, it's as if the transaction's not going to happen. There's no bishapara, and he can back out of the transaction. So now, Amar Ravashi qualifies and says, the whole issue here is mismach dat, that you are, that the recipient of the money is so mech dat that the transaction really happened. Even if he finds him in the shuk, then he can be, that's equivalent to some smichudat. What we're saying over here is that you don't really have to show up in the goren itself to make it smichudat, but as long as you see the person, you keep asking, or you keep telling him, I want my supply, then you'll have a smichudat, because he knows that you're really interested in supply, you're not walking away from the transaction. If that's the case, then both parties will be subject to mishaparad, will not be allowed to back out of the transaction. On the other hand, if he just shows up once, hands you money, and then never shows up again, the person assumes, the supplier assumes that this isn't a transaction, he's not really going to buy the supply in the end, because he would have shown up. He was going to buy the supply, but he found a better supply somewhere else, and he's just going to come get his cash back in the end, and not ask for the supply. All right, the last thing, last piece of the Gemara that we'll do today. So Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, Klal de Revito. This is the general principle of rebit, of charging interest. Kol agar natale asur. Any payment or reward or goodness that you received for the fact that you've actually lent somebody money or that they are holding on to your money, that is asur. That's what's called asur. Rav Nachman says, Hai mando yoiv zuze de kira. Person who gives money to a wax seller, gazle dalet dalet, and they sell 4 cakes of wax per zuz at this time. And the wax seller says to this individual, if you give me the money up front, I will supply you 5 cakes per zuz. If he actually has the wax with him today, then he can do it, because then he's making a decision. He's making a decision today to discount the price, hand him the wax, because he's desperate for cash, and he wants cash today. So he's willing to hand it to him at 5 cakes per zuz rather than four cakes per zuz. Lenuga Bay, on the other hand, if he does not have wax in his possession, asur, then he may not create such a transaction because he's basically now subjecting himself to market fluctuations of the price, and he's saying to him, basically, now, I don't have wax in hand, but in the future I will supply you more wax than you would have gotten if you purchased it at the market price today. If that's the case, you're basically paying him to hold on to the money. To get the money earlier, you're paying him and producing the supply later on, and that is called interest. Gemara says, pshita. That's pshita. That's exactly what we've been discussing all along here. That the only time you're allowed to create transactions is when the person has that item in hand. If he doesn't have the item in hand, then that's not classified as a transaction, but rather as a loan, and then you're paying him more money for the loan. It's called a vakribit. On the other hand, if he has the item in hand, then we permit you to do such a transaction. That's what we've been discussing all along. What's Rav Nachman adding for us over here? Where it says, Lotricha Adilei Ashray B'mato. He already has credit in the city. What does that mean, he has credit in the city? He's actually taken his cash and then bought supply forward of wax. He's gone around the city to all the wax suppliers and says, listen, I need wax supplied forward, four cakes per zuz, and he gives them cash. All of them he gave cash, now he's out of cash. There's no more cash, but he has the supply of wax coming in. Now he goes to this individual and says, wow, you know what, I spent all my cash, and I'm really desperate for cash today. So he says, I'm desperate for cash today, listen, I'll sell you a five cakes at a zuz, just give me some cash today. So what would have thought? I would have thought, since he has supply that will come in eventually, right? We had this case earlier in Bavmetzia, but which basically says that if I have the produce in hand, just there's some technical problem that I can't get it. For instance, my son has the key, or I just need to, my wife needs to come. Whatever the technical difficulty is, it's really in your possession. You can get to it. You just need to overcome some technical barrier. We said there it's mutar to sell for it or guarantee supply for it because it's as if it's in your possession. We don't consider that to be not in your possession. So I would have thought the same thing here. Since I have purchased supply already, it's as if it's in my possession, and I'm selling you something I already have in my possession. Gemara says, Kamash Malon, that no. Gave the Machserei Guvaino, Kamant Leitin Hudami. Since you don't have it in your possession, and you're Mechusar Guvaino, you would have to go and collect from these individuals the supply. It's not that you have the supply in hand already, and it's just there's some technical difficulty. It's more than a technical difficulty. You have to bought supply. When you bought supply, you haven't received the supply, and you're still missing a portion of your transaction, which is to actually get the supply into your possession. That missing link of getting the supply into your possession is what prevents you from then guaranteeing someone else supply forward. And therefore, when you offer him to sell him five cakes per zuz, you're basically offering him a money or payment for him lending you money. You're offering him interest for money. On the other hand, if you have it in your possession and it's only a technical difficulty that's blocking you from giving him it, then we can say you're really not subject to market fluctuations because you really own the product already. And since you own the product already, if it goes up in value, you own that product and you're not going to be subject to it. And now, why are you supplying him five cakes per zuz? You're supplying five cakes per zuz because you're desperate for cash today and you're discounting it to him to get the cash immediately. But not because he's lending you money, but rather because of the immediate necessity for your cash, and he's discounting it at today's price. So Tosfos here asks a question of Rav Nachman. He says that Rav Nachman later on in the parak says that we do not, when it comes to Ajivo B'ni, we say that's Asur. And yet over here, Rav Nachman saying it's Mutar. So Tosfos says, V'yishlamar, Devadai Derchava Asur, Afilu Saw B'Saw. If you're lending kind in kind, even if you have possession of the item, then we do not allow you to do this, according to Rav Nachman. When it's done in a transactional nature, which is that you're selling him supply, not that you're borrowing money, but rather selling him supply, then it's mutari, even if you give him five for four. So that's what Tosa says. If it's a derech avah, if it's done in the way of a loan, even if you're paying him saw v'saw, you're paying him equal for equal, you're giving him an in-kind payment, there we say that it's not mutar, even if you have the item in hand, according to Rav Nachman, but you're choser because you need to wait for your son, you need to wait for your wife, whatever the issue is, that technical difficulty will cause a problem because it's done derech havaah, it's done as a loan. Then if it's done derech mekach u'memkar, it's done as a purchase or as a transaction, then Rav Nachman will agree that the technical difficulty or the fact that you're unable to get to it now because of a technical difficulty would not be a problem. And that's not a problem even if you offer him five for four, even when you're offering him more for less. I mean, there's a market price today of dollar and you're offering him five, but because it's done as a transaction, therefore it is permitted. Now, Tosfos also makes it clear here that that when you go and go to the Goren, or you go to a place where the produce, he has it, but it's not completed, or it hasn't been fully worked over, where you could actually make absolute delivery to him, in that case, one can only, at that point in time, give him equal for equal, or for he can only sell it to him or supply him for it at the market price at that moment. But he cannot offer him a 5 for 4. He cannot offer him a discount at that point because there's still choser tikkun. There's still a necessity to fix or to complete the processing of this produce. If he has to complete the processing, and then there's clearly a delay in delivery versus cash. If that's the case, then he is basically borrowing money and paying back more. But if there is nothing needed, if there's no other fix that's needed for the produce, then it's mutar. If he has it in hand, then it's mutar, even, right, if it's 5 for 4, because over there it's making a business decision to discount it because he wants cash today, not because he is paying him for holding on to the money. Okay, we'll stop over here.